stood, watching as the cruiser pulled away. Catherine closed her eyes and turned toward the burning house, walking toward it like a moth to a flame until I stopped her. She watched the embers and ashes fly as if it were a firework display. Thompson spoke into his radio as he passed. He stopped abruptly, pointing at me.
"Don't go anywhere."
"Leave them alone," Mrs. Mason snapped. "They had nothing to do with this."
"It was all Mavis Calhoun," Thompson said, unconvinced. "That nutbag did all this with no help from these two? You sure?"
"You were wrong. You could have saved Presley if you'd just looked past your own arrogance," Mrs. Mason spat. Thompson's eyebrows pulled together. "You're just going to have to live with that."
"Becca's going to be spending the night at the hospital, but she wants to make sure you have somewhere to stay tonight," Mr. Mason said to Catherine.
Catherine was still staring at the juniper. She hadn't paid attention to Detective Thompson or Mr. Mason at all. "Catherine," I said, touching her arm. She pulled away.
"I want to watch. I want to see it burn all the way to the ground."
The juniper was burning, and the Mason's house was a bloody crime scene. She couldn't go back there.
"Yeah," I said. "I'll take her home with me. My aunt won't mind."
"Thank you," Mr. Mason said.
The sirens were deafening as the fire trucks pulled up next to the old mansion. Hoses were strung across the yard, and firefighters were speaking over their radios to one another.
"No. No. Let it burn," Catherine yelled.
"You're going to have to step back," one of the officers said,
holding up his hands and walking towards us.
"I have to see it,"
Catherine said, shoving him away.
"It wasn't a request. I said move."
He grabbed her arm, and she fought him.
"Let it burn."
"Hey," I said, pushing at his chest. He grabbed my wrist.
"Step back," he yelled in my face. "Okay, let's all calm down,"
Mr. Mason said, stepping between us.
"Catherine?"
She wouldn't look away from the house, entranced by the buckling roof and the flames flickering in her eyes.
"Catherine?"
Mrs. Mason said. When Catherine didn't acknowledge either of them, the officer sighed.
"All right,"
he said, forcibly removing her from the yard.
"No,"
she yelled, struggling.
"Get your hands off her,"
I growled, trying to pull her from his grasp. Another officer yanked me back, putting me in a hold.
"Leave them alone,"
Mrs. Mason cried. The officer hissed in my ear.
"You're going to get her hurt. Stop. Let Officer Mardis get her safely away."
I stopped fighting, breathing hard, my heart aching as I watched Catherine struggle.
"Just don't. Don't fight them, Catherine."
I walked with the officer to the ambulance, wincing as I watched her fight for a line of sight. She yanked her arms out of his grasp and took a closer step in awe.
"Get her out of here," Thompson said. "Get her gone before I arrest you both."
Mrs. Mason bit her lip.
"Catherine?"
She took Catherine's chin in her fingers and forced her to meet her gaze.
"Catherine, you have to go."
Catherine tried to turn toward the juniper, but Mrs. Mason kept hold of her jaw.
"It's gone."
A single tear tumbled down Catherine's cheek, and she nodded, covering her face with both hands. I leaned down and lifted her in my arms, carrying her to the Chrysler. I set her in the passenger seat. She sucked in a shaky breath and peered at the mansion over her shoulder.
"Get pictures."
I nodded and reached for my camera bag, unzipping it and standing next to Catherine while I zoomed in and snapped as many as I could before Thompson caught me. I shoved the camera back in the bag and then shut Catherine's door, jogging around to the driver's side. We drove the few blocks to Aunt Lee's. She and Uncle John were standing on the porch, worry in their eyes.
"Elliot!"
she yelled. rushing down the porch steps and throwing her arms around me seconds after I stepped out onto the drive.
What happened? Is Catherine...
She noticed the girl in the passenger seat with wet cheeks and red-rimmed eyes.
Oh, my Jesus, what happened?
The juniper's burning, I choked out.
Aunt Lee covered her mouth.
Is Mavis?
She kidnapped and killed Presley Brubaker. She kidnapped Mrs. Mason tonight. They arrested her. I don't know where she is. Aunt Lee's eyes glossed over, and she walked around the passenger side of my car. She opened the door and knelt beside Catherine.
Baby girl?
Catherine looked at her and then slowly leaned into Aunt Lee's chest. Aunt Lee hugged her tight, shaking her head, her eyes drifting to me. Uncle John's hand was on my shoulder. She's going to need to stay with us for a while, I said, watching Aunt Lee hold Catherine.
The spare bedroom is ready. We can pick up her things tomorrow.
He turned me to face him.
You okay?
I nodded, and he hugged me. Aunt Lee helped Catherine out of the car, keeping her arm around her as they walked inside. Uncle John and I followed. Aunt Lee disappeared with Catherine behind the spare bedroom door, and Uncle John sat with me in the living room.
We'll take care of her, Uncle John said.
I nodded. It was time someone took care of Catherine for a change.
Chapter 37. Catherine. I sat alone in the Youngbloods' spare bedroom, wood paneling the backdrop for white framed portraits Lee had painted of the family. A wedding ring quilt covered the queen-size bed, an antique wooden dresser with a mirror against the white wall. I smelled like a campfire. And even though Lee had offered to let me use the shower, I declined. Watching the juniper burn was unexpected closure, and a strange sense of calm came over me every time I inhaled. Mama could never go back. I would never have to go back. We were free. A short knock on the door snapped me to the present, and I blinked.
Hey,
Elliot said. His hair still wet from a shower. He was wearing a worn T-shirt and basketball shorts, and he padded to my bed in bare feet. Hey.
You okay?
He asked. No, but I will be.
Mr. Mason called Aunt Lee. Mrs. Mason got a couple dozen stitches in her head. She has a concussion, but she's going to be okay. Her sister, Lauren, is coming to help clean up. And then they said you should be able to come back when she gets home, if that's okay with you. Is that okay with you?
I nodded. I don't think it's right to ask your aunt and uncle to take me in.
They don't mind. They really don't.
Becca will need me. I should stay with her. Elliot nodded, sitting on the bed next to me.
That's too bad. I could get used to this.
He handed me his phone, open to a group chat with Sam and Madison.
They've been blowing up my phone, worried about you. I told Maddie you'd call her in the morning.
How did you know? I asked. To come to the Juniper?
After I dropped you off, the farther I drove from the Masons, the worse I felt. I couldn't shake the bad feeling I'd had all night,
he said.
I pulled into Aunt Lee's driveway and then backed out and turned around. I drove back to the Masons, saw the red and blue lights, and I parked where I stopped. I didn't even shut my door, I just ran. When I saw the blood... I've never been so scared, Catherine. I tried fighting my way into the house. I screamed for you. That's when Mr. Mason told me you were okay, but you'd left. I went straight to the Juniper. I knew that's where you'd go.
I hugged him, burying my face in his neck. You came back. He leaned his head on mine.
I told you I would. And now that I know...
Now that you know, I repeated, peering up at him. He sighed, looking down at the carpet. I'd tried to push him away for so long. Now that he had a reason to walk away, it was more difficult to accept than I'd thought it would be.
But if that was what he wanted, I wouldn't blame him. What happened in the basement was almost too much for me to believe, and I couldn't imagine the things going through Elliot's mind. "Say it," I said.
"You could have told me. I wish you'd told me sooner."
"It was a secret," I said.
"Then you can definitely keep a secret."
I let him go, curling into myself. It wasn't mine to tell. He reached for me.
"I'm not even sure how to process what just happened. Presley's dead. Your mom..."
"It wasn't her." Elliot nodded, but I could see in his eyes that he was having a hard time separating her from the others. "Mama hasn't been right for a long time. Looking back, I'm not sure she ever was. If things got too hard, she would seem to short-circuit and fall into a deep depression and stay in bed for days. Dad would try to shield her from that, to shield me. When he wasn't home, I could see it. I could see them all in glimpses, but I didn't know it at the time. Dad's death made them stronger, and the juniper was the perfect bridge to allow them out. When Duke and Poppy showed up with names, personalities so different from Mama, I was afraid. I didn't understand. And the more I tried to speak to Mama when she was present as Duke or Poppy, the worse she became. When I played along, the personalities surfaced for longer periods of time, but her behavior was more predictable. At first, I let it continue because I didn't want anyone to take Mama away. But now that they're gone, I loved Althea and Poppy. I kept Mama's secret to keep them. Now Presley is dead, and I've lost them all. Elliot rubbed the back of his neck.
"It's not your fault, Catherine."
"Then whose fault is it?"
"Why does it have to be someone's fault?"
"If I had gotten Mama help, Presley would still be alive. But I thought I could do it. I thought I could have both. I was sure I could have you and protect the juniper for Mama." I choked back another sob. "She's gone. She's guilty of murder because I was selfish." Elliot pulled me into his lap, and I pressed my cheek against his chest.
"You're the least selfish person I know, and you're even braver than I thought."
In the end, it didn't matter. I couldn't save them. I didn't even get to say goodbye.
"We can go see her, you know. We can visit."
"It will just be Mama."
"But Catherine, isn't that a good thing?"
I shook my head. "You don't get it."
"No, but I'm trying to understand."
"Then understand this. Everyone I care about either gets hurt or dies."
"Not me."
"Not yet."
"Catherine," he sighed, "you need to rest."
He rubbed his eyes, tired. I could hear the desperation in his voice, the need to help me, to fix it all. But this was the first night of many that I would try to dig myself out from the ashes of the juniper.
"What were you supposed to do? If you told someone, you would have lost your home and your mom. If you didn't, you had to keep living in that hell, and your mom couldn't get the help she needed. You were right, Catherine. You've been saying it all along. It wasn't a choice. Don't pretend you had one now."
"And look where that got us."
"Here. Safe with me."
His words were tinged with impatience, as if I should have known.
"You know, for 2 years everyone said I should forget about you, but I fought for you anyway. When I finally got here, you hated me, but I fought for you anyway. You kept your secrets, you pushed me away. You've all but said that we're over after graduation, but I keep fighting. When I opened the door to the basement, I didn't know what I was walking into. But I walked down the steps anyway. I'm not scared of much, Catherine, but I was terrified of what I would see when I rounded that corner, almost as much as I am terrified of leaving Oak Creek without you."
He squeezed my hand tighter.
"I know your secret, and I'm still here. I've been here, and if it means being with you, I'll do anything to stay."
I pressed my lips together. "Okay."
"Okay?"
he said, stumbling over the two simple syllables. I nodded.
What does that mean, exactly?
He asked. Baylor, the in-between, remember? He laughed once.
Yeah, I remember. But are you going to come with me?
I shrugged one shoulder. Mrs. Mason said I could get grants and maybe an academic scholarship. I could get a loan to cover what's left. I could get a job. I'm no stranger to hard work. Elliot wrapped me in his arms, holding me just a little too tight. His arms trembled, and he sucked in a staggered breath, pressing his forehead against my temple. Are you okay? I whispered, holding on to him.
I am now.
He let me go and quickly wiped his cheek with the back of his hand. He inhaled and then breathed out a laugh.
I was sure this whole time I was going to lose you.
A ghost of a smile touched my lips. But you fought for me anyway. Epilogue. Catherine. Mama eyed Elliot from across the table. She wore a khaki jumpsuit with a string of numbers stamped in black on the front pocket. The room was an octagon shape, with a large window in each section. 40 or so plastic chairs were tucked under the 7 round tables peppered around the room, most of them empty. Another woman sat with another couple, looking increasingly agitated.
"How long will you be gone?"
Mama asked.
"We're just 7 hours away. I'll visit on every break," I said.
She glanced over her shoulder at Carla, the female guard standing between the door and the vending machine.
"Want a snack?"
Elliot asked, standing.
"I'll get some snacks," he said.
His chair squeaked against the tile floor when he pushed it back to stand. He walked across the room, greeting the guard, and then looked over the choices in the machine. He stood a bit sideways so he could still see me in his peripheral vision, ready to act if needed.
"With me here and you at college, who will tend to the juniper?"
Mama asked, fidgeting. "The juniper is gone. Remember, Mama?"
"That's right," she said,
sitting back against her chair. She tried to revert back to the world we'd built inside the juniper at least twice each visit, hoping I would play along like I used to. But the doctor said it was best if I didn't play into her fantasies.
"Did you get everything settled with the insurance company?"
I nodded. "They sent the check last week. It's going to cover college and then some. Thank you for signing the papers." Mama tried to smile, but it looked unnatural on her face.
"Well, you can thank your dad. He's the one who insisted I..."
She trailed off, noticing my expression.
"Never mind.
I think it's nice that you still talk to him." Mama looked around and leaned in.
"It's okay. We won't tell anyone. You don't have to worry."
"What do you mean?" She noticed Elliot returning and sat back.
"Nothing."
Elliot returned with 3 snacks.
"Nacho chips and pretzels. Not much of a variety."
Mama tore open the red bag, chomping loudly. I saw glimpses of Poppy as she ate, wondering if my friends were still inside of her somewhere. The visits with the doctors at the state hospital in Vinita, Oklahoma, were focused on getting rid of Althea, Poppy, Willow, Cousin Imogen, Uncle Toad, and especially Duke. Trying to talk to any of them was strictly forbidden. I peered up at the cameras as Elliot slid his hand over to cover mine.
"Time,"
the guard said.
"Do you have to leave?"
Mama asked. "Elliot starts football practice soon. We need to get on the road, get settled in." She snarled at him.
"Be nice, Mama."
Elliot stood.
"I'll take care of her, Mavis."
I'd seen her leave, but Elliot wasn't used to the signs of her flipping personalities yet. Mama wasn't there.
"Carla,"
I called, standing. Duke glared up at me, his nostrils flaring. Carla attended to Mama while we walked out. I'd gotten accustomed to not saying goodbye. Duke usually appeared when our visits were over.
I'd hoped Althea would come to say goodbye, but Duke was the only one strong enough to push through the medication. Elliot seemed antsy as we gathered our things from a locker and then went through processing at the exit. He pushed open the double doors, squinting one eye in the sunshine, reminding me of the day we met, except he was holding my hand instead of punching a tree. Our shoes crunched over the gravel as we walked to the Chrysler, and Elliot opened the passenger door with a smile. The trunk and back seat were full of boxes, mostly Elliot's. I had most of my clothes and my music box from the Masons, but everything else had burned in the fire. The photos Elliot had taken of me and Dad were the only ones I had left, and they were packed in one of the four boxes that held everything I owned. The Chrysler had been baking in the summer sun while we were visiting Mama, and the first thing Elliot did after he twisted the ignition was turn the AC on high. Within a minute, icy air blasted through the vents, and Elliot rested his head back, sighing in relief. The velour seats were soft against my bare legs, tanned from spending time in the young blood's pool, but still not as rich as Elliot's skin. I reached over, running my fingers over his arm.
"What?"
he asked. "We're going," I said. And without the governor your parents installed when you were grounded from driving back to Oak Creek, it won't take us a week to get there. Elliot slid his fingers between mine.
"We are. We'll be there by dinner time."
He gestured to the floorboard in front of me.
"Reach under the seat. I brought you some reading material."
I smiled, wondering what he was up to. I felt between my legs, touching a shoebox. "What's this?" I asked, placing the box in my lap and opening the lid. A stack of envelopes addressed to Elliot's Aunt Lee were stamped and sealed. "Letters to your aunt?"
"Open the one on top. They're in order."
The envelope was thick, and I tore it open, pulling out four pages of notebook paper, the fringe still dangling from the inside edge. The handwriting was Elliot's. My name was at the top, dated the day my dad died, and it began with an apology. "Elliot," I said quietly, "are these?"
"The letters I wrote you while I was gone. Every day at first, then two or three a week until the night before I came back."
I looked at him, feeling tears well up in my eyes. "Elliot."
"I thought you'd had them this whole time," he said.
"Your aunt never gave them to me."
"That's because she never had them. My mom never mailed them. She gave them to me last night. Going away present in addition to an hour-long apology."
I looked down at the scribbles filling the page. I bet that went over well.
I was pretty pissed. But at least she gave them to me. Now you'll know.
"Know what?" I asked.
"That I tried to keep my promise."
I pressed my lips together, trying not to smile. Elliot backed out of the parking spot and drove through the lot, slowing to a stop before pulling out onto the road. He took a sip of his watered-down soda.
"Read them out loud, please. It's sort of like rereading a journal."
I nodded, starting at the top of the first letter. "July 30. Dear Catherine, I'm so sorry. I didn't want to go. My mom said I couldn't come back if I didn't leave with her when I did. I shouldn't have. I'm so mad that I fell for it. So mad. I'm mad at her and myself and the whole thing. I have no idea what happened or if you're okay, and it's killing me. Please be okay. Please forgive me. I know when you're not worrying about your dad, you're busy hating me. I should be there with you and for you. It's killing me. You're somewhere thinking I abandoned you. You have no idea where I went, and you're wondering why I didn't say goodbye. You're the last person I'd want to hurt, and I'm almost 3 hours away without any way to contact you. I feel helpless. Please don't hate me. My parents fought from the time we got back home until I pretended to go to bed.
Mom is just afraid I'll want to stay in Oak Creek if I get too close to you. She's not exactly wrong. I do want to stay there. I did plan on asking Aunt Lee and Uncle John if I could stay, because the thought of packing and leaving you behind made me feel sick to my stomach. Now I'm here. It all happened so fast, and you probably hate me. If you do, though, I'll just keep trying until you don't. I'll explain as many times as you'll let me. You can hate me for a while. I'll understand. But I'll keep trying as long as it takes. I'll say sorry as many times as I have to until you believe it. You can be mean and say mean things. You probably will. And I'll let it slide because I know when you understand, everything will be okay. Right? Please let it be okay. You know I'd never just leave you alone like that. You'll be mad at first, but you'll believe me because you know me. You'll forgive me, and I'll get back to Oak Creek. And we'll go to prom, and you'll watch me suck at football. And we'll get our shoes wet in the creek, and swing in the park, and eat sandwiches on your porch swing. Because you're going to forgive me. I know you, and I know everything will be okay. That's what I'm going to tell myself until I see you again.
Okay. Elliot said, cringing. It's all coming back to me now. They're not as romantic as I thought.
No, I said. I love them. This is amazing, Elliot. I mean, it's heart-wrenching to read how worried you were, but you were right about everything.
He squinted one eye and smiled, embarrassed. I kind of was.
He brought my hand to his mouth and kissed my fingers. Want me to keep reading? I asked.
You don't have to read them out loud. At least not until you get past the one where I got caught trying to drive to Oak Creek. They're a little less desperate and repetitive after that. I think I can stomach hearing those ones.
I thumbed through the stack, looking up at him with big eyes. There are at least 100 letters here.
And that's just the first box. I can't believe Mom didn't send them, but I'm even more surprised she kept them all.
I'm surprised she gave them to you. That was a risk, doing it right before we left. You could have left mad.
It was a gesture, I think. A way of apologizing for everything.
Would you think I was ignoring you if I read them all?
He chuckled. Go for it. They're all there, and it's a long trip.
My shoulders shot up to my ears, and I bobbed my knees. I was giddy thinking about getting to read Elliot's thoughts while he was away.
You look way too happy to read the torture I went through, he teased.
I thought about that, remembering how much I missed him and how angry I was not knowing where he'd gone. The long nights with Mama and the longer days at school. Elliot's time away was no better. I wasn't sure if it was right or wrong that I found comfort in knowing I wasn't alone in my suffering. Only because I know how it ends, I said. Elliot smiled, looking more content than I'd ever seen him.
This isn't the end. Not even close.
The Chrysler turned onto the highway, and we drove south toward the Oklahoma-Texas state line. A new dorm, a new roommate, and a new life was waiting for me at Baylor. The quad where the athletes stayed wasn't far away from Brooks Residential, where I would be living. The insurance money from the Juniper would pay for all 4 years of college, and Elliot had a full scholarship. The worst was behind us. I set the shoebox to the side between me and the passenger door, and then reached back for my music box, setting it on my lap. I turned the crank, watching the ballerina spin slowly to the familiar tune that had always helped me relax. I settled in to read over Elliot's words.
You okay?
Elliot asked, squeezing my hand. I smiled at him, feeling the sunshine filtering through the window. I'm just excited, and maybe a little tired.
You don't have to read the letters now. Rest. We have plenty of time.
I leaned against the headrest, my eyes feeling heavy. Promise? He brought my hand to his lips,
kissing my knuckles, and then nodded. He returned his attention to the road and, to the tune of my music box, hummed me to sleep.
We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of All the Little Lights by Jamie McGuire, performed by Carissa Vacker and Daryl Dennis, directed by Ryan Burke. Performance copyright 2018 by Brilliance Publishing Incorporated, all rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brillianceaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.